evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, January 29, 2020. Two communities are fighting over grazing land in Western Lake State.
We don't have the investigation of what had happened. We don't have actually the comprehensive detail because the area is quite remote where the country was taking place. So there's no proper communication given the fact that there is no network coverage alongside that river.
And rebels dismiss President Salva Kiir's latest amnesty offer.
That degree pardoning our leader, General Thomas Cirilo, is a laughing stock. It's a mockery by the government of Salva Kiir and his system. First of all, this is not the first time that they have done it. In 2017, they have issued another degree.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Young men from two clans are fighting over grazing land in Western Lake States. Western Lake State Information Minister Benjamin Lat Mathau says the area of the fighting is cut off due to bad roads. He says there is no information on the number of casualties, but unconfirmed reports say 17 people were killed in the fighting, which erupted on Tuesday and is still going on. Mathau dismissed the casualty figure, adding the area of the clashes has no telephone network and it's not easy to get accurate information on the number of casualties.
The whole thing actually happened early in the morning, and up to now, we don't have the investigation of what had happened. We don't have actually the comprehensive detail because the area is quite remote where the country was taking place, so there's no proper communication given the fact that there is no network coverage alongside that river where people were fighting, and so we don't have road network because the thing actually happened in the middle of the swampy land where the cattle camps converge in a dry zone like this. So we don't have, as for now, some detailed information as to what had happened. What we have now are the rumors, and those rumors actually, they are not healthy for the government to rely on. But already, the minister have gone there, the minister of local government and the peace advisor, went there in the morning, and up to now, I don't have communication with them.
It's my understanding that the governor of Lake State condemned the violence. He spoke to reporters in town, and he condemned the violence. Apart from the condemnation, what is the state doing to contain the situation? Because it looks like these issues keep coming up.
In fact, the issue is stand condemnation as it was put by the governor. That is one. Number two, he actually placed our demand for the army with the government. Because the solution which we have actually resolved to be the final solution for these local communities who are firearms is the disarmament. So our request for the disarmament lies with the national government. So we are waiting for the national government to avail the forces that we go in for disarmament.
And talking about disarmament, it appears like some of these youth or young men in the cattle camps armed with all sorts of sophisticated weapons. I was told even some of them have RPGs, which are not normally seen in the hands of civilians. Where do they get those arms from?
Okay, well, they get the arms. You know, this issue of rebellion in South Sudan make firearms to be available to the civil population because the very place where fighting was taking place today is at the vicinity of one of the rebel control area. So to access firearm or ammunition is not actually hard given the closeness of the area to areas which are controlled by the rebels.
Which rebel group is close to the area where the clashes took place? Could you be specific?
Well, places like Mong Ping is an area for Rup people. It's next to a place called Panyijar, which is the rebel. Other communities also along that side, they are closer to to that side. And again, before even this plan, there were some movement between the rebel control area and the people who are occupying that area for the Lagos State. So those movement also facilitated the trade for the firearms. So unless the revised agreement peace is implemented, instability actually will not be close to be achieved along that border.
Talking about stability, how would you react to some rebel groups who will tell you that this fighting over grazing land has been there even before there was rebellion in South Sudan?
Well, those who are actually, they don't know the real situation because what the lady said is vast area is a big area, and it's threatening the forces all over the area will not make any meaning, given the fact that most of our armed forces have been taken to containment areas for dressing based on what has been actually articulated in this agreement, whereby the forces have to be immediate. So we have a good number taken for training, I think, for the last 3 or 1 month. The very few we have would not contain any situation of that nature because we have forces which are taken to a place called Rubel North, which have a problem, I think, 1 month ago. So we took a good number there. Inside town also, we employed some. Along the road also, we employed some. So the forces are actually inspired, and they are now thin. They cannot make any impact. Should there be a problem today, it should be right. Then for them to address it amicably, I don't think whether it is possible.
That's Benjamin Lath Mathew, Western Lakes Information Minister, speaking with me today about an ongoing fighting between two communities in that area. South Sudan in Focus will continue to bring you updates on that situation. South Sudan held out armed groups are rejecting an amnesty offer. President Salva Kiir announced yesterday that offers the group's leaders a chance to return home and participate in the implementation of the revitalized peace deal. National Salvation Front spokesperson describes the offer as a mockery, saying it's meant to divert attention from the problems the government is facing in implementing the peace agreement. Lasuba Memo reports for VOA from Juba.
President Kiir's amnesty offer was announced in a presidential decree broadcast on the state-owned South Sudan Broadcasting Corporation last night. Kiir's press secretary Atenue Kateny says the offer allows opposition leaders to return to the country and take part in a unity government due to be formed when the pre-transitional period expires next month.
This is to allow peace to be inclusive. You know, that is why they are pardoned, so that they can also have time to join. It is very important because the president is determined to see peace returning to the country. And by peace coming to the country, whatever peace that is being implemented must be inclusive and must be implemented in letter and in spirit.
The amnesty offer is directed specifically at Thomas Cirilo, head of the National Salvation Front, Paul Malong, who heads the South Sudan United Front, and Pagana Mum, leader of the Real Sudan People's Liberation Movement, or RSPLM. Speaking by phone from an unidentified location, Malong tells South Sudan in Focus he is not ready to return to Juba under this deal after being put under house arrest for several months in the South Sudanese capital.
Is the one who have arrested me in Juba, is the one who have surrounded me with the tent in Juba, is the one who exiled me without even passport. That country, I fought for it.
Samuel Suba, spokesperson for the Hollard Group National Salvation Front, calls Kiir's latest amnesty offer nothing more than an exercise in public relations.
That degree pardoning our leader, General Thomas Cirilo, is a laughing stock. It's a mockery by the government of Salva Kiir and his system. First of all, this is not the first time that they have done it. In 2017, they have issued another decree. So we don't know what is the difference between this and that one. We just look at this thing as a public relation display to divert the mind of the people of South Sudan from the failing revitalized ISIS.
The offer comes 2 weeks after the Kiir administration and a coalition of 9 opposition groups under the umbrella South Sudan Opposition Movement Alliance agreed to upholding the ceasefire in Rome. Malong says he welcomes a recent initiative aimed at encouraging dialogue between the Hollard groups and the government. but says Kiir should have first addressed the opposition group's grievances before announcing an amnesty offer.
This amnesty is to come before that negotiation. When we negotiate, we have said it, and we have accepted the root causes to be negotiated. There is nowhere here you can again come up with amnesty, and you did not address the root causes.
During the meeting in Rome, government representatives and leaders of the holder groups agreed to recommit to the 2017 cessation of hostilities agreement to create a conducive environment for dialogue. Suba says the National Salvation Front still wants to resolve its dispute with the government using peaceful means.
We stand by that process. We wanted a process which is genuine, mediators that understand the whole process and has a reputation of how to manage the whole process, not the way they did it in Khartoum, where people were harassed here and there and intimidated and the like.
The amnesty offer was announced a few days after U.S. Assistant Secretary for the State Department's Bureau of African Affairs, Tibor Nagy, met with Kiir in Juba. In a teleconference call from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum, on Monday, Nagy called for the formation of an inclusive transitional government by the agreed to February 22nd deadline. For VOA News, I am Lasuba Memo in Juba.
Authorities in Bia State say youth suspected to be from Buma State attacked several people, abducted children, and stole more than 1,000 head of cattle. Buma State Governor David Yaoyo acknowledges that some criminals from Buma carried out the attacks. Dengai Deng reports for VOA from Bor.
Speaking by phone from the Bia State Capital Ward, Bia State Information Minister James Yen said at least 8 people were killed and 5 children abducted in Bia State villages last weekend.
Last week on Saturday, a harm youth of Murule came to Bong. They came to Bong and then they began riding the head of cattle at 10 a.m. And the five of the Murule, 3 of them were killed, and 2 of them escaped with the wounded. And the area of Lomwe, 3, 5 is like 5 is killed in the area of Lomwe and 3 is killed in the area of Murule.
Yen says the attackers are still hiding in nearby forest and bushes, frightening locals.
The whole youth of Murule are around Bia State. They are terrorizing the security, even near to Pogtab, to Pajut, to every day there is incident in all these two areas, even in the Bor, in the side of jungle in Bor, and that is causing insecurity. Even the movement between the villages is hard. It's only youth. Women cannot move, and children, because when they see children moving with their women, they are begging literally. When they see youth carrying guns, they cannot do anything.
Yen warns that unless Boma State authorities prevent their youth from carrying out attacks, Bia State youth in neighboring communities will retaliate.
Boma authority, it should be just awareness to your people and to your youth that the Murule criminals, which they call criminal, and then we call them, it is their people. We can hide them that if they could have a meeting with the youth and telling them if the South Sudan is in peace, are they out of the peace that is all the people have now in South Sudan to silence the gun? What do they have in their mind?
Boma State Governor David Yaoyo says his administration is trying to prevent youth from carrying out cattle raids and other violent attacks in Bia, but insist the attacks are few and far between.
These are just criminalities of 2 people, of 3 people, 5 people. We don't really have heavy attack like previous years. So we mean we are still moving on right track. I don't see any point of accusing ourselves and blaming and all this.
Yaoyo says his plan is peace to communities of Greater Jonglei and South Sudan at large, but did not offer specifics. He called on authorities in other states to work with Boma authorities in finding effective ways to end criminal activity in the region. While visiting Greater Jonglei a year ago, First Vice President Taban Dengai warned state officials, including governors, to step up action to prevent intercommunal violence or risk being held responsible for future attacks carried out by youth from their communities. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, more than 11,000 Sudanese refugees flee to Chad this month alone. Find out why when we come back after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. Question today.
What do you do to conserve your energy when it is very hot outside?
I drink lots of cold water because it relaxes me. So immediately I become dehydrated or I feel hot. I take in more cold water, yes, and it makes me okay.
Well, I live around the beach, so on a hot day I just take a stroll on the shore wearing a light cloth so that I can feel the sea breeze around myself.
If it is hot, you have to make sure that you get somewhere where it is cool. You go and bathe. Those are normal things you have to do.
When I'm at my home, I undress. It is my home. I have a bedroom. My home is big. Why won't I undress?
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations Refugee Agency says more than 11,000 Sudanese refugees have fled to Chad this month to escape intercommunal violence in West Darfur State. Lisa Schrein reports for VOA from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The situation in West Darfur has continued to worsen since the dispute between Arab and African ethnic groups ignited violent clashes in El Geneina in late December. The UN Refugee Agency reports that last week alone, 4,000 people fled to neighboring Chad in search of safety. The agency says most of the refugees are among 60,000 people who have been internally displaced during previous fighting in Darfur. UNHCR officials say they expect as many as 30,000 Sudanese could cross the border into Chad in the coming weeks as tensions increase. The UNHCR spokesman Baba Balar says new arrivals give accounts of widespread destruction and of being forced to flee after their villages, houses, and properties were attacked, with many homes burned to the ground. While they are safe, he says conditions in Chad are dire.
Most are staying in open or under makeshift shelters with little protection from the elements. Food and water are urgently needed, while health conditions are a concern to humanitarians.
Balak says his agency and others, as well as the Chadian government, are providing life-saving aid and are assisting refugees needing special care, including unaccompanied children. But the UNHCR spokesman says the government and humanitarian agencies are limited in what they can do and says international support is needed. Baller says the refugees currently are scattered in several villages along a span of nearly 100 kilometers close to the Chad-Sudan border. He says the UNHCR and government currently are looking for a new site further away from the dangerous border area where the refugees can be relocated. Meanwhile, in West Darfur, inside Sudan, he says aid agencies are rushing relief items such as blankets, sleeping mats, and jerry cans to help those who have been displaced by the clashes. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Now on health matters, South African medical scientists are expecting a blood sample from a suspected case of the new coronavirus in Ethiopia to arrive in Johannesburg for testing later today. The country's National Institute for Communicable Diseases says it has also noted reports of a possible case in Zambia. It is, however, confident that it has the expertise and the technology necessary to lead the way in containing the coronavirus outbreaks in Africa. Darren Taylor reports for VOA from Johannesburg.
South Africa's Health Minister Zweli Mkhize says the National Institute for Communicable Diseases, the NICD, has the continent's most sophisticated reference laboratory. As such, it will know of a coronavirus case in another country in Africa before that country knows itself, should the relevant blood sample be sent to it for testing. Mkhize says South African scientists and officials are following the same paths that have prevented the Ebola virus from reaching the country.
We would actually have details of a case detected in Congo even before it lands anywhere close to us here. We have been able to pick up any suspicious cases and screen them and test them and make sure that it is not Ebola, so that there is not a risk that a patient could be wandering around.
He says the NICD has developed and distributed clinical guidelines about coronavirus to doctors and nurses throughout the country and is sharing them with African partners. Mkhize is confident that coronavirus won't spread in South Africa, even though several flights from China arrive in Johannesburg and Cape Town every day.
Due to the current risk of importation of inadvertent cases of the coronavirus from Wuhan City, our port health authorities have intensified surveillance of all travelers from Asia, especially in China.
Mkhize says all international passengers will be screened upon entry for the very high temperature associated with coronavirus using non-invasive thermometers. Should a person show this and other symptoms, he or she will be quarantined immediately, tested and treated. One of the NICD's chief scientists, Professor Cheryl Cohen, says specialized coronavirus outbreak response teams have been activated across South Africa.
We have established an expert clinical group, which is led by an infectious disease specialist, and this group is really mandated to actively scan all of the emerging information about the best possible treatments for patients with this virus and then update the clinical guidance as information becomes available.
She says should this group identify a case in South Africa, it's ready to prevent the spread of coronavirus.
There will be immediate activities to identify all the possible contacts of that case in real time and start active contact tracing and monitoring of these individuals. These contacts will be monitored for 14 days to see whether they develop any signs and symptoms.
Mkhize says the government's aware of at least 35 South Africans who are currently in the epicenter of the coronavirus outbreak in China, Wuhan City, and will take all necessary steps to ensure their health and safety. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
African entrepreneurs, Silicon Valley investors, gathered to talk about the state of entrepreneurship on the continent and what is needed to help businesses thrive. Michelle Quinn has this report for VOA.
At the Computer History Museum in the heart of Silicon Valley, people gathered recently at the African Diaspora Investment Symposium to talk about the future of Africa business. Almaz Nagash is the founder and executive director of the African Diaspora Network.
In the past, many Africans, and especially people like me from the diaspora, we were not invited to the table to really discuss on issues that matter to the continent. So we said, well, what if we can just bring everyone together so we can have that discussion at the same table?
Remittances, money sent by people living in the U.S. to family in Africa, has long been a key way to support the continent, speakers said. But Nagash and others said there are other uses of diaspora funds.
how do we scale remittances so that it can also be invested in other people than our family, supporting startups.
While many investors and businesses want to come to Africa, it can be a challenge to navigate, which is why African nations have been working on the African Continental Free Trade Area, said Joseph Matura, Google's first sub-Saharan African lead and now a minister in the Kenyan government.
How do they, with the different regulations, different countries, be able to get into the continent? So we are providing the platform that they can now use. They come, and as part of the Continental Free Trade Area, they are able to then go to many of the other different markets.
For the roughly 50 African entrepreneurs attending the event, this was an opportunity to pitch their businesses. Abubakar Kamara, an architect from Guinea, is working on a housing startup.
That we're implicating people in the process of actually building their homes. You know, we want to change the concept of what is architecture, because architecture has a lot to do with your identity.
Nenik Holis is the chief executive of a sports technology company in South Africa.
So we have a smart wearable that is sewn to the garments around the joint ankles of the athlete's garments.
Barbara Burungi Mutabazi runs Uganda Women in Technology, which trains female students and young women for technology jobs like coding.
Yeah, I've made some really good connections, especially in terms of funding, fundraising.
And I'm proud to be a second generation family business.
For many of the attendees, the event was a welcome chance to talk about Africa's successes. Thelma Akayor runs a Nigeria-based business accelerator and an investment fund for women-run businesses.
The problems that Africa's had for years is we tend not to talk about the progress and the developments that are happening on the continent. So it's been a pleasure to come here and share with people that live here in the valley about the work that we're doing.
Connections made at this event can be long-lasting as people look for ways to be part of the burgeoning African business sector. Michelle Quinn, VOA News, Mountain View, California.
That report from California brings us to the end of our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Reconciliation by Kebaz.
Yeah. The homeboy Kebaz and Leviticus Levi.
Reconciliation.
You already know we're talking about reconciliation. Yeah. That's all we need. That's all we're praying for. Levi, tell him, say. Zamanuja fishari, ligolo white kid on bigger so ban to wali. Sarau, the jeron bitao, humbogodu sawa kulu yom the kebabs for levy. Friendship town bigger tala gowi, the berenga te sharwai who osli gowi. Lakini omina yam shitan, daka to ras bitao, gada bukuad, la hadi lupari has no bad to call a friend.
Forgiveness wanna preach.
I have a strong desire burning like a fire. Let us take time, making we can take it higher. This is the generation. Change the nation through peace and reconciliation.
Umondikeli manina masaki, lakini na Mr. Kalsedi. Umondikeli manina deifi, lakini na inu ima. Reconciliation ya uri na deru.
Manina deru.
Reconciliation is all that we need. Umondikeli manina masaki, lakini na Mr. Kalsedi.
We've been listening to Kebaz with the song Reconciliation. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could be part of this show. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Pigidam tala, mabzul meskin, mabzul ganiani. Pigidam tarabuna, eh.
focus family. Me and you, you and he. Let's try to meet a different. To be as family. To live as one is on.